Yeah, so the yogi's delight is, oh my goodness, here is the presence of presence. Here is awareness in conscious contact with itself, and the entire apparitional field occurs miraculously and remarkably. The sense of affliction that one may feel is tantamount to a sense of individuation as a body, as a mind, as a consciousness packet, as an experiencer, as a reporter and recorder, as someone or something bookended by what we call birth and death.
That is constantly at risk. Nonstop at risk.
Yeah, absolutely. Or let's say risk is, on tap.
Yeah.
You may not always be feeling at risk, if you're in a safe environment or enjoying some hot tuna while smoking a doobie and driving down to the diner, then I'm not at risk. But underlying, let's say, distraction, right? The normal distraction of the news and the media and the to-do list and the job and the kids and the spouse and the parents and the appointments. You could say there is a seething undercurrent of dissatisfaction or disharmony or depression. Fatigue and apprehension. And this is absolutely epidemic, though even everyone appears to be hanging in there. The number of us that are medicating, either self-medicating or pharmaceutically medicating, is legend.
Yeah.
I don't know, does anyone actually release honest results on how much of the West, as in let's just say the United States, is under the influence of something, if not many things, to medicate and ameliorate the existential panic that we're not willing to feel or talk about?
Even just sugar. I mean, that's in everything, everywhere, right? That's
You know it. Sugar counts. Absolutely. But all of that, of course, is just another clever statistic, right? A clever statistic appearing in a dream. So we can use the word actual, sovereign, present consciousness. None of them are true, of course, but they suggest, at least in primate language, something essential, something inarguable. And that would be that this is so, that experiencing or conscious contact is occurring. And that conscious contact appears to be construed of stuff appearing in awareness. We think that stuff and awareness are two separate locus, points, loci, loci. So if awareness, which clearly we are enjoying or suffering, and stuff, which is clearly appearing on the landscape, is occurring, then right, the hint of separation. Hey, we're doing a conference here.
What? Are you on a speakerphone?
Yeah, we're out. This is live. This is live, baby.
I bet.
I don't know. I'm trying to be serious and conduct a certain kind of conversation, and the lights go on, and the
Okay,
ironing
look, I
board
didn't
gets
just
opened
flash you
up,
that.
and
Jeff, I almost just flashed you.
really?
like, you know, we were on a set and it just, it was like, the little shoot was over and the lights came on.
I think it's time for me to get an office. Huh. So, yeah. So, what's the baseline? The baseline is, oh, goodness, experiencing is occurring. Experience seems to be constituted, made of awareness and objects appearing in awareness. And therefore, we refer to that, or the Buddhists do, as conscious contact. Conscious contact, which is not two, which is the irrefutable realization of your present experience, can be felt, perhaps is often felt, by 7-point-something billion primates as two. Self is the corporeal, or my identity, encased, ensconced corporeally in my body, my mind encased in my body. That's the subject. The body's an object, but the sense of self is a subject. Subject is punctuated by awareness, the movement of perception, psychological time, feeling, right? The transitoriness of feeling. And the transitoriness of feeling is, curiously, the evidence we think we have for there being time. The transitoriness of feeling is all we have at our disposal to suggest the passing of time, which is really bizarre. So when you boil some of this stuff down, conscious contact is presently appearing. And conscious contact is not two. So it seems if we take up residence in conscious contact, as conscious contact, which is already the case with no effort on our part, by taking up residence in it, the suspicion is, at least the yogas suggest, that one can wake up from the dream of two. That's why they call it non-duality, waking up from the dream of two. Vipassana, insight. Insight into the collapse of two.
This is also doing that too, right? So, I
can't really. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's really impossible to fight with the uninvited conviction of two.
Yeah, I'm
not gonna happen. It's not gonna work.
Like, that's right back to, like, you know, you might as well stick a needle in your arm, because,
or a pencil in your eye.
This is you're gonna get, right? Yeah. A pencil here.
I think this is ultimately what we grapple with when we are suffering from suffering and wisely want to be relieved from suffering from suffering. We grapple with the uninvited conviction of two. And so we try to ameliorate the symptoms. Which sometimes come and go. I mean, even the most suffering of the sufferers who suffers can't maintain it. You know, with total absolute conviction 24/7. Even the most extreme suffering sneaks in a giggle. in the midst of, you know, the unbearableness of it all. But then again, I haven't been in, you know, hand-to-hand combat manning a outgunnable tank and stuff like that that we see portrayed in movies.
But then the reaction seems to be similar to one who might be sitting in a tank.
Yeah. Impossible to know. I mean, you know, our parents, or those of us with parents that are already deceased or in their mid-late 80s, right? Lived through the Second World War and the Great Depression and all of the horrific skirmishes that this country has committed itself to since then. We live in a social milieu of the ongoing consecration of war, of corporate hegemony, of the violation of human and women's rights, and we consecrate these violations. This is what the media has done, and the educational system has done, and the food chain has done, and the chemtrails have done. We have all participated in the great consecration of a human conflagration that is sending us all straight to hell. And yes, consciousness has done this.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Because what we call the human does not, what we call human kind of obeys its own pattern. The human obeys its own karmic atmosphere. It can't be brighter or more sensitive, less violent than it is. Amongst maybe few humans, or maybe amongst the majority of humans, would prefer nonviolence, but a small percentage of humans that control money, influence, power, media, police, and the war on drugs, they're fond of violence, fond of irradiated weaponry, and starvation, and all kinds of fun toys to wipe out their so-called enemies. Their enemies possessing different idolatry than the greenback or our right to oil.
I have a question for you.
Thank goodness.
If I'm understanding your definition a little while ago, to me, in what you're describing now, there seems to be a great lack of conscious contact in that.
Oh, there's no lack of conscious contact. All there is conscious contact. You might be referring to a lack of conscience.
Different.
Yeah, a deplorable dearth of conscience.
Mm.
Yeah, but conscious contact reigns supreme. Whether you live at Hogwarts or North Korea.
But and I guess I misunderstood your original definition.
Hmm. Yeah, conscience is really a byproduct of something delicious and weird and mysterious and empathetic and crazed and capable of genocide. Conscious contact is the implication of conscious contact is the primality of the first-hand nature of experiencing. Before you think, you are, right? Before I have an opinion, I am. Before I'm a gender or before I have any history or story to tell or plan to make, I am. This is. Conscious contact is so. The question is conscious contact, as irrefutably so, between a subject and an object? Is it two? Sounds like that's Maxine's microphone. I don't know how your computer does that. It's amazing.
Oh no, it's my magical Shakti, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, all right. So that was like a Shakti interlude then?
Yeah.
Felt that way to me.
Sounded a little like a submarine.
Yeah, a submarine and a train. Maybe it was a subway train going by on a submarine.
Yeah, yeah. That's my ability to put realms in.
Wild. Well done. It might be worthwhile attempting to glimpse into the nature of conscious contact and the genesis of two, right where we stand, right, dead in our tracks, right here, right now. You could see how present awareness is hijacked by attention to thought. Awareness is hijacked by the seductive nature of rumination and metaphor creation and thought as the harbinger or genesis of identity. It's simple. It's right here. It does it right now. It does it right here. The association of conscious contact with the movement of rumination as inner dialogue, language, felt sense, self-assessment, is indeed the present genesis of self, the delusion of self. Wow. You don't have to sit on a cushion for all that many years to go, whoa, dude, self just appears right here. If there is self or the sense of self, it appears just, wow, it appears right here. I kind of never noticed that. I kind of always took it for granted that I was the perpetual self, right? That I was the durable perpetual self. I never noticed that it actually appears in view or conjures into view in situ, that it's not a given. That's strange to see, that the sense of self, of individuation, too, is actually not a given. It is not the default condition. This is some wild yoga, I would say. Well, if the sense of self is not the default condition, okay, well, what's happening right now? What is the nature of experiencing, of conscious contact? And that it is irrefutable. What it is impossible to know. How it conjures individuation is curious to discover. I mean, what the hell is everyone's goddamn cathartic enlightenment experience about? What the hell is it about? Someone was looking at birds, someone was looking at the back of their hands, someone was struck dumb by something the guru said, somebody was weeping hysterically because they were being dumped by two women at the same time. I mean, I don't know. What happened to Adyashanti? What happened to Krishnamurti? You know, Krishnamurti was in a house, and he was up late, and he had these terrible headaches, and he was visited upon by, you know, hordes and hordes of angels, and went through a big cathartic thing, and, you know, in the morning it was like, whew, made it, boy. I'm fucking realized now.
I'm gonna need 2 cups of coffee this morning.
I'm gonna need 2 cups of coffee, yeah, and polish my firearms. Somebody go to the barn and polish my firearms. Because I'm going to go out there shooting. I'm going to take down those theosophists. The Order of the Star. I'm going to take them all down. Because now I got the goods. That's my question. What the hell? I mean, Greg Good was sitting on the subway, looked at the back of his hands, and, you know, woke up. Wayne Lickerman, you know, his two girlfriends broke up with him within the same time, and he was such a baby. He went into like a total despair of, you know, wasn't loved enough, and he was broken up with, and it was terrible, and he kept, you know, dropping and dropping and dropping and dropping and dropping until he realized in an instant that there was no one that could be harmed. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, these are the stories I've heard. I've heard many of them firsthand. You know, it goes on and on. Well, you know, Peter Brown had an incredible encounter with his guru when he was in his teens, probably under the influence of something that's illegal. And then, you know, some 20 years or whatever later, you know, he was sitting quietly on his living room chair, and he went, Satchitananda. Oh, I get it. You know, it was a lot of misery in between the first event and the second event, but, you know, it was, like, worth it. I mean, our dear friend Jillian, you know, was hungover from a real bad bender, as she commonly is, perhaps, and she was maybe sitting there with her head in her hands going, God, this hurts. Why do I drink so much? And whap, she was free. So what? I mean, what happened? Tell me what happened. What happened to you? What happened? Jesus Christ. What changed in your experience that made you utter the words, I am free, or I am enlightened, or realization has struck here? What the hell happened? Can someone talk about that, please? I don't know. But if something happened, well, it sure as hell has to be this. It can't be something that happened. It has to be this. Well, what is that funny membrane, if there is such a thing, between imagining conscious contact to be, to suffer from too, and therefore take ourselves to be individuated in body and mind, individuated in whatever, and therefore cranky. And then, you know, along comes Pamela Wilson or Gangaji, Bentinho Massaro, Jeff Foster, Scott Killaby, Jesus Christ, the list goes on and on of people that have reported enlightenment experiences of one kind or another that appear no longer to be suffering from the myth of two. What the fuck was that? I don't know. But it's got to be this. Huh, let's see. Francine lives in the woods. I live in the woods. That must have been Steve's. That must have been Steve's. I think it's a fair question. You know, if you're in this game of realization hide and seek, I think it's a fair question. What happened to those lovely men and women that are the now proud enjoyers of self-realization. Yolande. I mean, the list goes on and on, blah, blah, blah. What happened?
Some cathartic experience.
I wonder. I really wonder. That's what it sounds like. I mean, if you read Bala's rendition of his enlightenment, and Bala is a devotee of Wayne's, and, yeah. I don't know how that happened.
Burn. The fire.
Oh, don't mind the brief interlude.
It's brand new.
Not anymore.
Maybe, is Beth like the commercials? Beth, do a commercial.
She might.
Let's have an advertisement.
I think the myth, there's a myth. Well, where was I going? Oh, yeah, Bala. If you read Bala's rendition of his enlightenment under the tutelage, you know, loving affection of Wayne Lickerman, it's moving, you know. I mean, Bala's an entertainer. He wants to entertain. He wants to tell a good story. He wants to draw attention to himself. And then, after he's convinced you of the catharsis of his enlightenment, reminds you that it's no big deal, and then teach something about the Bhagavad Gita. What a yawn. It's a big fat yawn. I guess the line in the sand, or the gauntlet that I'm throwing down just for fun, is this has to be, this right here has to be the same warp and woof, the same stuff, the same evidence that the enlightened guy or gal is working with. So my challenge is, or my sense is that, hey, we can chill out with conscious contact, just as it is. Kind of look into it, fall into it, rest in it, wonder about it, feel it out. And treat ourselves to the same non-dual discovery of the so-called cathartic enlightened. You know what, even if it doesn't last, even if it doesn't stick, that's okay. We're not trying to outdo anyone.
I'm just laughing because I left my propane on. I could smell it. I'm like, oh, this will be my enlightenment event right now.
Oh yeah, the whole house will just go right up.
Don't light a match.
Yeah, well, here we are, you know, we're feeling this. How does it occur to you? What do you see? How do you feel it? How does it convince us that it's two?
Strange little movements of light look like this.
How does the magnificent, radiant flow of conscious contact, bliss itself, Satchidananda itself, uh, what is it called? Pin interest? Right? How does this pin itself with self? It may be magical, but I don't think it's, beyond apprehension, beyond perception, beyond consideration. Do we dare? Do we have the guts? Is it possible to look right into the face of the genesis of two, the genesis of separation, the creation of the conviction of a self at risk? Do we dare do it? Rather than wait around pining for a cathartic intervention from some other place than here.
Has to be somewhere better. It's gotta be.
Yeah. I mean, I like it. It's fun. Here this is, and I don't have to tell a story. I can, but I don't have to tell a story. It's like, oh, this is conscious contact. I'm down with that. It's weird. I can just the texture of conscious contact is here, is weird, is certainly vibratory. It's not imaginary. Conscious contact is not imaginary. It's the presence of being. It's the presence of life, the presence of experiencing. That's cool. This is so. Now, is it accompanied by, is this conscious contact, this presence accompanied by, the ongoing discursive rumination of being a person? Being what? Separate? Vulnerable? At risk? Having to control stuff? We can look right into the barrel of the gun. That suggests what you were speaking about a little earlier as this curious agitation that springs up. Maybe it's felt as a resistance in the abdomen, or call it any one of the chakras, right? It can go to the first sphincter, and the second, and the third, and the fourth, and the fifth, and the sixth, and the seventh, and who knows where. But this most remarkable sense of association, or genesis of self, is not the default condition. It's not a given. It arises.
But is there a default condition?
No.
What? There is no default condition, right?
No. Well, it depends on how you want to language this irrefutability, right? Peter wisely uses this. He refers to this. When Moses or somebody asked God what he was all about, the idea was what? I am that I am? I don't know. Soham? Green eggs and ham?
That works for me.
Yeah, I'm down with that. I'll have the Dr. Seuss special.
Well, you're saying that just the experience is what is your default condition?
one could say that the irrefutability of conscious contact is, you know, a default feeling, a default appearance, a default apparatus. Or say it's the default condition, though it doesn't bestow a condition, or nor does it incarcerate anyone in such condition. But conscious contact as a shorthand for the radiant nature of awareness or perception receiving, if not also expressing, all phenomena, all objects.
Right, so, but I feel like the self would just show up, it just shows up in there with that, also as constant contact.
Mm-hmm. That's the puzzle. In the enlightened, you know, the lucky ones, clap, 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 the lucky ones tell us, oh, you know, this is without self. This is non-dual. This is not two. I am now free from the heresy and lamentation of fear. So for the card-carrying seeker, the end of fear, vulnerability, neurosis, worry, apprehension, planning and greed of all kinds is something that they might vaguely be interested in. You know, I'd like to take it home for a 7-day trial, maybe, and give it back if it doesn't suit me. And that fits in with the model of enlightenment being some kind of cathartic event, right?
Yeah, that you can like put in a box and purchase, and yeah, exactly. If you don't like it,
well, yeah, I mean, it gets.
It's like you got your money's worth. You can return it.
It's treated that way within the curious circle of, you know, guru and aspirant, right? Someone is in possession of clarity, happiness, joy, unconditional love, miracles, who knows what. Saints, there are saints. There are probably a handful of them living today. And one can go to a living saint and get a lot of nachas. That's why they wrote about Ramana Maharshi and Nirsagadatta and Wayne and Bala and everybody else. You know, you go to a saint and you're like, chill. It's the saint's job to reveal to the aspirant the geometry and the texture of realization. That's their job. Some of them do it really well. So conscious contact is really just shorthand for referring to our immediacy, this immediacy. And that this immediacy does not insist on two. It conjures us two, it can conjure us two. But thankfully to the enlightened, we have sufficient evidence, maybe great confidence, that this conscious contact can also effuse as not to. the enlightened haven't given up food, bathing, money, tax planning, and, you know, the creation of 501c3 institutions for nothing.
But not willingly.
Really?
I don't have any of those
things. That's right. The destitute may have given these things up, but not the enlightened. The enlightened are fond of eating. Jean Klein liked his pasta al dente. With just the right amount of, you know, heat and seasoning. He was no porridge eater. So for any yoga, yogini or yogi, here we are. We don't have to be doing the plow pose or the crow or shivasana to have a vital relationship with conscious contact. And keep a close eye on conscious contact to see if it is rendering to. If I find myself afflicted by affliction, that has to be a good yoga. It's kind of intimate. It's kind of immediate. Because we're looking at it now. We're looking at it here. I'm not hiding out behind a story or a pain body or the resolution of a pain body to gum up the works. This is effusing, it's effervescent. Conscious contact. Present, irrefutable. That's all there is. It's weird to consider your present experience as all that is. Because if you look at a photograph of the Hubble, or from the Hubble to the deep field, you sure can create in your imagination a sense of your unbearable tininess in the midst of truly inconceivable space, a truly inconceivable plenum of express galaxies. In an immeasurable volume we presently refer to as the known universe, because we can only see as far as we can see back into the past. If you think you can look at a point a light year away from Earth as if there were a point or an object in that place a light year away from Earth, and you were witnessing the photonic impression from that place, let's say a star, you would be looking at light that is 1 year old. You would be having a present experience. Your experience is present, but you would be staring at least from the alchemy of relativity, you'd be staring at a photonic packet that emanated from a place a light year away and is now reaching your telescope. So it's real easy to think of oneself as small, if we even dare imagine, right, what it feels like to be a primate in a place, in a continent, on a planet, in a solar system, in a corner of a galaxy amongst billions of galaxies. It's wow, I am pretty small. And that's cool. I would also suggest is that it's equally bananas to look at the nature of present experience, conscious contact, awareness, objects appearing in awareness, the tickle of time, personal space, corporeal identity. I would suggest it's possible to consider present awareness truly as all that is. Because for you, for me, present experience is positive. What the hell else? Sorry, you've got your funky computer. You're feeding back. Yes? No? Oh, it's still acting up. Oh, maybe it's calmed down now. So I don't know what I was going on and on about. This is all it is. It really is all it is. I mean, there may be Turkey and Greece and the Ukraine and troops amassing and people dying of Ebola and horrific tragedy in what we call Syria. And all over the planet there's just, right, horrific violence going on as a daily way of life. Horrific violence going on as a daily way of life for I would cry out for too many people. But we have consecrated it. We have all consecrated it. What a shallow, stupid species we turned out to be. But still, in the midst of all this, you know, diatribe, here's present experience, and it happens to be all that is. It's a very bizarre geometry. Because what we call mind so easily places itself temporally or spatially within the context of world events fed into us either through entertainment vehicles or the so-called news reporting media. And so all of this dendritis, mental dendritis, distracts us from the bizarre fact that our present experience indeed is all that is.
It's very masculine. It's just total, like, mental push-ups.
Yeah, that's
whatever.
Sure, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, you say masturbation.
I think you can apply, you know, either gender, right, as the masculine or feminine principle to the curious conundrum of conscious contact and see how it behaves what we would call in a masculine manner and see how it behaves, you know, in a feminine manner. And I would say they're in cahoots. At least in the misogynistic literature from, you know, Vedic sources, like Hinduism, right? Shiva is portrayed as the unmoving, quiescent, background field. And Kali is portrayed as the maker of mayhem. But that may not be true. I mean, you know, it could be just exactly the opposite of that, that the feminine principle, though, you know, expressive and reproductive as the yoni, is the background field. And the masculine principle, you know, is the cedar of total mayhem.
I mean, who knows? Look at that a million different ways.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You know, I mean, you can see, yeah, like the feminine in this immense insanity, you feel it. That's what, you know, that's it. So, I don't know. You could say the masculine maybe is more the trying to, whatever the background is imaginary. There is no background.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, it's real. There are so many wonderful, call them tarot decks, within the Akashic field that refer to the bizarre subtlety of the Kabbalistic tree of life and the entirety of the creational morphogenic field in with wonderful metaphor. I mean, astrology, tarot, human design system, runes, I Ching, Western occultism, the mandala of the Mayans. I mean, everywhere you look, you know, we find incredible referential calendaring of all kinds, pattern recognition of all kind. And many of these tools are used, you know, for divination. Since conscious contact is both nothing at all and effusive. Maybe that also can be seen as a contributing factor to the hallucination of two. That this is so effusive and replete with pattern and the capacity for recognizing pattern all within itself. These magical powers of consciousness, of conscious contact, are able to create what we would refer to as, you know, ego, separate self. It's magical. Even our suffering, if there were any, is magic.
Yeah, it just shows that I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not having any success with controlling mine anyway. Maybe I should just speak for myself.
No. Well, the silly notion that, you know, a primate is born and lives in a certain kind of, you know, nether world of beatitude up until the time they're around 2 years old, and then they start saying, no. You know, as if that was some kind of fall from grace. I'm like, you know, it just seems a little bit, I don't know, tongue-in-cheek. Maybe a little bit precocious to have some idea that primates live in a certain state between, you know, conception and birth and 2 years old, and then from 2 years old it's more or less straight to heroin.
And my memory is vague.
And then you need a guru like, you know, Paul Hederman or Scott Killaby to you know, survive the heroin addiction. It's strange out there. Yeah, Beth was telling me that Scott Killaby has a addiction recovery center in Palm Springs, and of course on his website he's saying that he's successful confidentially speaking and working with celebrities. So you're like, wow, some enlightened guy helps celebrities to get over, you know, addiction? Sign me up. So now they use...
Does he have commercials on TV?
Is what?
Does he have commercials on TV?
No, I don't think he's there yet, but I wouldn't put it past him.
Someone does that has a similar voice out there.
Yeah. So now they do a... You know, they do a combination of tapping, right? Tapping comes from, emotional freedom technique, right? EFT. Yeah. And EFT is linked with EMDR, right? All of which are, you know, tools of dealing with post-traumatic stress syndrome and or, you know, addiction. So Scott Killaby does... chakral.
Claim to be pulsing with everything and anything.
He does chakral tapping. While he does, you know, non-dual. Yeah. He does chakral tapping while he does non-dual dialogue. And this intensive process rids his celebrant celebrity clients from addiction. I don't know what any of that has to do with self-realization, but in today's marketplace, you know, how you monetize your self-realization and your commitment to the relieving of the suffering of others is very important to your pocketbook and your own celebrity.
I feel like that's pretty much all we walk around doing right now. If there were other people in the world, that's like the only way we relate to each other.
It is. We've been so ingrained to relate to each other as mercantile packets.
Yeah.
That even the local enlightened people are jumping on the bandwagon of relating to their, you know, students as mercantile packets. You know, I'll put on a dog and pony show for you. Hopefully you'll get high. Maybe you'll fall in love with me in a platonic manner. I'll sell you a t-shirt and, you know, you'll invite me to your town again.
I don't think we really know how to relate to each other or interact in any other manner.
It's curious. I mean, we may all turn out to be extraordinarily intimacy disabled.
That seems to be the case.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's like a learning curve, even though nothing's happening. But I still see there being some kind of a weird...
Yeah. I don't know. The whole species is intimacy disabled, even though we're quite, you know, good at copulating and creating more of us. It's so funny. It's like, how do you engage or hook, seduce someone's attention to pay attention to anything, to do something? I mean, to think about enlightenment or self-realization or the yoga of radiant presence or traveling lighter or something. I mean, how do you even engage someone, yourself, or a friend, or a group of friends, in, you know, a discovery process which doesn't turn into some kind of mercantilism or, you know, anecdotal madness?
That's tough. I don't know. That's where I'm at. I don't know. I don't know how to relate to anybody. It's like, what?
Yeah. I think it's a fun question, because when we hear the term satsang, right, in the company of truth, whatever that may be, you know, you could see that as a kind of a refuge where human beings that are actually seeking authentic, insightful experience turn. Satsang. Or they go to see, you know, Jai Utal or Krishnadas and chant Hare Krishna. Right? Everybody wants in or out, depending on how you look at it. I want out of myself and into God realization.
Well, I could be wrong, but one thing that I sense in this commercialization of guru and follower is that there seems to be a level of a lack of communication of a type of intimacy that's involved in this kind of path.
Yeah, wow. Sweet observation.
So, the commercialization, I think, makes it easier for one to be distracted from that intimacy. Because I think in that intimacy, there is a level of losing one's self, which is really, I think, what we're aiming for in the first place. So yeah,
it's really bizarre, because the measure that we use, the measure that we might use of trust, of safety, of communication, of intimacy, of being high together, right, of whatever shakti is, or the recognition of the throbbing nature of consciousness. All of these things are, irrefutably so and irrefutably present, and at the same time, we can't really rely on them. I mean, isn't it funny that conscious contact, absolutely unencumbered, need not rely on anything? Maybe that's, one of the ingredient elements of the cathartic experience that all of our enlightened friends have had. Right? We could say, oh, they've discovered that they're not the consequence of anything, nor do they rely on anything. That they're experiencing whatever it is or isn't is truly all that is. And what appears, in the biosphere as the microbial expression of my absurd life, clearly does itself. That's a little bizarre, because, conscious contact then becomes a conduit for a transcendent view. Conscious contact is the vehicle of the transcendent view, which is just this. I mean, if you want a catharsis, go to the supermarket and have a catharsis.
Put up flyers about it.
Yeah. Make a YouTube video of yourself with a cake and candles. And Pink Floyd playing in the background, and let everyone know that you're enlightened too now. I don't see any difference. Declare your non-dual awakening through a birthday cake, candles, and a YouTube video. Then, it's just as good as anything Jean Klein ever did. Or Jesus, even.
Yeah. I don't want to be responsible for doing anything similar to whatever Jesus did. That turned out.
No, no, that could be some scary shit.
Oh,
really?
God.
Yeah, the whipping was just unrelenting, especially in that movie.
Not even that. I mean, if there was any remnant of Jesus left, if that occurred, you know, when you die, you actually have some remnant of yourself. I mean, now you got to like just feel guilty for the rest of eternity for what's going on right now. You're like, oh, God.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, if Jesus actually ascended and had to look down on what became of his ministry, he must be
one.
Oh,
shit, I should have just stayed in the desert.
Really upset guy.
Oops.
Yeah. So I'm not sure what any of this was about, and that's a good thing. We really do have at our disposal, as in nonstop, the radiant miracle of conscious contact, which will not apparently abate for as long as we presume ourselves to be, you know, alive. And this conscious contact is indeed the entirety of our experience. It's all that is. It's both the portal and the realization of unmitigated realization of itself. It's also very, you know, clever and playful and loves a practical joke. The reason that there's no time is because conscious contact always lives on April Fool's Day. Groundhog Day would be a step up. Every day is April Fool's Day. Conscious contact is playing trick or treat and peekaboo with you by making it appear as if it's two. I would like to start a new religion that only has two holidays. That would be April Fools and Halloween. And every day is both April Fools and Halloween. Trick or treat, you are fucked into two. April Fools.
Just kidding.
Just kidding. April Fools, just kidding. Trick or treat, you're fucked into two. April Fools, just kidding. That will be the name of the new religion. Yeah. Well, the candy and costume industries would go absolutely wild.
It's a great name for an album cover, too.
Yeah. Every day, everyone all over the world is entitled to dress up and trick or treat, which is what we do anyway. It's also April Fool's Day perpetually is just added good news. Boy, I sure wish I felt better than I do right now. Somewhere out there, I really, somewhere out there is a cathartic experience waiting to happen to me. I can feel it. My ship is coming in. And I plan to be dockside when it does. Ooh. April Fools. Just kidding. Trick or treat.
I want more candy.
I don't know if that many people are going to come to this ashram. I really don't. Trick or treat. Just kidding. The perpetual Church of April Fools. Would you like some, would you like some candy? We better figure out how to train dogs or make pies. Otherwise, we're going to starve. We need to find a benefactor so we can purchase beautiful grounds. And this way, tourists can come.
Definitely.
Ding dong, trick or treat. Just fooling. Come on in. What do you guys worship here? No one can figure that out.
Try door number 4.
Yeah, but we make some pretty good pies, and if you've got a dog, we'll pretend to train it. Yep. Yeah, well, if you need addictions counseling, just go down the road, find Scott Gillaby's place. We can't help you with that here. You can't help me with my addiction? No, trick or treat. Just kidding. Yeah, really. The only thing we're sure of is that this is not about anything. So I'm not sure if we can help you. Is it lunch?
Do we have any candy?
Oh, are you looking for a cathartic experience? Oh, that's in room 222.
Oh, okay.
We'll see you at lunch.
Thank you.
Just kidding.
Hey, nothing happened in room 222. Oh, April Fools. But there's some good venison on the stove.
I'm hungry.
Hey, what about me? That would be the trick or treat department. Hey, I think I found a solution for suffering. Well, that would be April Fools. I think it works. I think we're onto something. Retail will go straight to hell because we don't celebrate Christmas anymore. No, it's just Halloween and April Fools. Yeah, Lincoln and Washington's birthday off the table. Yeah.
That was good.
I'm telling you, what passes at satsang these days makes me want to cry. April Fools. Trick or treat. You're fucked into two. Just kidding. Swami, Swami, what's real? Oh, that's another department.
Down the hall.
And we don't celebrate that here. We don't know how. Woof. Well, I'm sure this recording will be enjoyed by maybe one other person.
If you're lucky.
If I'm lucky. Really,
I've been listening.
So. I got to get my hands on some celebrities and start healing them.
Why don't you start with Russell Brand? Yeah, that would be fun.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we'd have a nice turnaround with him.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for your kind company this evening.